Kaneki? How do you pronounce your name?
Kaneki.
May it please the Court, Mr. Carr. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Assistant Federal Defender Judith Kaneki, and I'm here today representing Mr. Ramirez-Silva. This case is on appeal, arguing that the District Court abused its discretion when it failed to adequately address the defendant's non-frivolous and principal arguments that were made pursuant to Title 18, Section 3553A. Additionally, the reasoning that the court gave for the sentence imposed was extremely vague and generalized and could have applied to any defendant who had been convicted and was being sentenced under an illegal reentry charge.
But on the other hand, it does seem to me, not to trivialize them, but the mitigating factors that he wants to raise also look very standard. You know, he wanted work, he's trying to feed his family, he has elderly relatives, you know, the ill relatives, but we see that a lot.
Those were but one of the many arguments advanced under 3553A, Judge. Mr. Ramirez-Silva also advanced the argument that the court must impose a reasonable sentence based upon his contention that the illegal reentry guidelines are inherently flawed and produce an unreasonable and unsound sentence. We argued in various ways that Mr. Ramirez-Silva's one conviction was used in multiple ways to produce excessive punishment.
So when you say multiple ways, though, certainly he has a prior, and it's actually from an immigration point of view not a trivial one. He's been convicted of smuggling aliens into the United States, so that does make him a recidivist from that point of view. And I guess, number two, he's probably facing revocation, right, on that?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Which was your third way?
It was used to calculate his criminal history. He received 3 points plus an additional 2 points for being on supervised release.
But that's always true when you have a recidivist enhancement built into the offense level, and then there's also a criminal history. I mean, the criminal history points are what they are.
It is, Your Honor, but it goes to the flawed nature of the guideline where he's hit twice under criminal history. He's hit under the offense level where
why is that flawed? What's wrong with, in essence, a fairly severe enhancement for somebody who is convicted of alien smuggling, deported, and then comes back into the United States?
Well, the guidelines themselves are flawed because they were not based upon empirical study, as most guidelines are expected to be. The enhancements that were added were simply added as congressional dictates, and also with the changing case law or the changing political views on illegal immigration.
It's a political system. That's how we make decisions. How is that flawed?
It is flawed in that it results in multiple punishments, and as the guidelines are now advisory, it is an appropriate 3553 argument for the court. The court has the discretion, once it has determined the applicable application of the guideline, which it did, to then look at the nature of 3553A and determine whether or not it is producing a sound and reasonable sentence.
Does it have the obligation to consider the validity of the entire guideline?
I believe it has the obligation to at least tell us why it did not.
But then you don't have any real authority to support that argument. I mean, there's not been a court that's held that this is the guidelines improperly enhanced and the various provisions.
I believe there was a district court out of Wisconsin which held that the 16-level enhancement was so inherently unfair that it resulted in an unreasonable sentence. I also believe the 15.
But no circuit court has adopted that reason.
Not to my knowledge, Judge, no.
And is that a conclusion? Refresh my recollection. That was Judge Adelman's decision.
Yes.
Did he conclude that it could never be applied reasonably and fairly, or simply that it would not be fair or reasonable in a particular case?
In a particular case, depending upon the particular circumstances of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the point of this appeal. The record is devoid of any mention of the district court judge to any of the principal arguments that were made. We also argue
That's certainly a stronger argument than saying all guidelines have to have empirical support, because that actually gets you to a problem that goes back as far as Aristotle, you know, what is a fair sentence for a particular crime in the abstract. But on the particulars, if the question is, did Judge Gilbert say enough to support his 3553A balancing, we can certainly look at that.
And that is the argument on appeal, Judge. That is but one of many arguments that the defendant made to the court, and none of the arguments that the defendant made were addressed by the court. We had a generalized statement that illegal reentry is a serious offense, that he wanted to keep my defendant from coming back.
So that's deterrence, right? I mean, that's a factor.
Deterrence, but it doesn't address just punishment. It doesn't promoting respect for the law by imposing a reasonable sentence. It doesn't address any type of disparity argument. It doesn't address any type of argument which goes to the specific nature and characteristics of this defendant, and whether or not under these circumstances the court, having decided the guideline was appropriate, then considered any of our 3553A factors. That is the crux of our argument.
Okay. If you want to save a bit for rebuttal.
Yes, please. That's
fine. Mr. Carr?
Good morning, Your Honors. When I read the opening brief, the position taken by the defendant in his opening brief was that the district court completely ignored the defendant's principal arguments. I filed and that's at page 17, section B of their brief. I filed a reply brief indicating that the principal arguments really were addressed in the addendum, which the court signed off, which was an addendum to the pre-sentence report. And then in the follow-up reply brief, we've moved from completely ignored the principal arguments to the district court's adoption of the addendum does not constitute adequate consideration. So we've gone from completely ignored to adequate consideration. The brief and the argument of the defendant is that there was not that the court did not address the principal arguments. It's our position that it did. The process in the Southern District of Illinois is that there's a pre-sentence report made. There's a local rule that requires the attorneys within 10 days to file any objections that they may have to the pre-sentence report, which was done here. And actually at sentencing, the principal argument was that the 2-year maximum penalty should apply rather than the 20-year maximum penalty because the statutory provision that was used in the indictment was Section A of 1326 rather than B. The parties briefed that issue. That was addressed by the probation department in the addendum. There was also, as part of the objections that were made, this 16-level enhancement in a double or even a triple counting kind of thing. And if you look and read through the addendum, the probation office, who generally consults with maybe some attorney from the sentencing commission or even the parties, actually put in like a 4-part response to this 16-level enhancement and talked about the legislative history and how actually the 16-level enhancement was believed to have been kind of a remedy for a system that had relied upon courts departing away from the guidelines to take into account the prior illegal smuggling offense, the aggravated felony that this defendant was involved with. So in essence,
is there that the district court took into account the illness of Mr. Ramirez Silva's mother?
You know what? I don't know that. I don't think he said anything. And I thought long and hard about this when I first looked at it.
He'll be removed anyway, right? He'll finish his
anyway. And you know, having been through 30 years of sentencings, and I think maybe the court hit on this, there's a certain amount of discretion a court has to have in addressing a defendant. I mean, a United States District Court at sentencing can be a volatile situation. Sometimes I've watched courts serve in a counseling role. Other times I've watched them just unload. But the discretion about whether or not comments are going to do any good, whether or not they really matter, I think in terms of the illness of the mother and, you know, in this case we're talking about he's poor. He's from Mexico. He came to this country because he wanted work. And
I get that all of those things are very common. But if we are to do our job looking at sentencing review, which Congress in its wisdom has given to us, what we've said is let's say, the things that stand out from the crowd of reasons do need to be addressed and talked about. The district judge doesn't have to march through every single thing, however trivial, that's raised. But if you want to know whether a longer sentence or a shorter sentence for this person is appropriate, and you know he's going to be removed at the end of it, and you know his mother has been diagnosed with leukemia, maybe that's a reason to think, just let the removal happen, send him back.
Might be, but under these circumstances, I believe his mother had leukemia before he was removed the time right before. And I think that was even part of...
Is that in the record?
I think that I may have said it. I can't remember right offhand.
Because this note from the doctor is dated 8-7-2009, which probably means July the 8th.
I think maybe where I may have come from this was from the pre-sentence report that I read that, because I didn't have an independent investigation about that, but my knowledge must have come from the pre-sentence report. So, I mean, I guess all I could say is I would assume that the judge read that, but no, he did not address it that I know of.
This 16-level enhancement, the court didn't really deal with Judge Adelman's decision. I know it was pointed out in that pre-sentence memorandum to the court.
Mm-hmm.
And how is that case distinguishable from our circumstance?
Well, I believe in this case that, first of all, independently, this as Judge Wood has pointed out, I think the 16-level enhancement is something that the court took into consideration. Obviously, the court was concerned, apart from the 16-level enhancement, with the fact that the person was a recidivist, that he'd actually had a conviction in New York. I believe the pre-sentence report said he smuggled 7 people and had a couple $1,000s in his pocket when he was charged, when he was stopped on the interstate. He gave a false name. He had documents in his in his pocket that showed his car was registered in one state with a different name,
no,
and all this other stuff. And so
that's crystal clear. I'm talking about the argument counsel's mm-hmm. making, that just inherently, you know, the 16 levels. I understand the factual basis for the finding, but I'm talking about the.
Well, I don't think that he addressed that argument, but I do think that. That in the addendum itself, which I think the court's entitled to adopt, I think the court pretty much adopted the position that Congress looked at that as being a serious offense, and the 16-level enhancement was something that that should be imposed to differentiate between those people that have that as a background. So while we don't have a specific response by the court to that, I think that it's pretty clear that he intended that, or that he thought that the 16 level should apply. And in the scheme of things, when we got finished with those objections, the court asked for a recommendation. It was like in that context that this fast track stuff, the fast track argument came up, is really in the context of recommendations. I think that the court's comment was, you know, it's up to the Seventh Circuit if they want to, you know, take care of that, because we've already been over this. The law at the time, at least, you know, in this circuit, was that the lack of a fast track program was not something that would be considered to be something that the court should depart on the basis of. And I think that it did that under the reasoning that it wasn't an unwarranted departure, but in fact warranted, because Congress itself had decided that there should be a differentiation between them. So in essence, we take the position that because the judge made a decision within the guideline range, that it's presumptively reasonable. We take the position that it is allowed to set up a process where most of the objections are fleshed out. This court gave the defendant a chance to address anything further that it wanted, you know, as part of that process, and it's our position that it was also procedurally reasonable under the circumstances. Thank you.
If I could just ask you about the fast track issue, there are a number of different districts that have those programs,
yes,
as you know. They're not identical.
They're not.
But they generally do require the defendant to indicate very, very early on an intention to plead guilty.
Yes.
When did the decision come in this process, in this case?
I think I'd have to say it was early on. I don't think that there was ever really a contention about that. But I would also point out that you've hit on a point. There was nothing in this record for the, where the defendant established that he would have been part of any fast-track program, and that's on him. I mean, mm-hmm. To point out the fast-track programs, he didn't do that.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further?
Your Honor, I do want to distinguish between what the trial court considered for the purposes of determining the applicable guideline, which is one argument, and the defendant's objections. The defendant is not raising or arguing his objections on this appeal. He is arguing only the improper consideration given to his 3553A arguments, which happen to be similar to the arguments made upon objection, but have a completely different goal. 3553A goes to the reasonableness of the sentence that the court is going to impose. The district court is not allowed to presume that a guideline sentence is presumptively accurate. They must look at all the 3553A factors and impose a reasonable sentence. This was not done in this case. The record is devoid of any reasoning by the court. I can't determine if his sentence was really reasonable because I have no reasoning of the court to base that upon. For all I know, this may come back if the court remands it as we've requested as an Anders brief, if the court sets out sufficient reasoning. But the record is devoid of any reasoning, any address to any of our arguments, and therefore we have no basis to know whether or not the court imposed the 46 months based upon reasonable reasoning in this case. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.